pizza delivery has come a long way. It wasn't too long ago that the person tasked to bring a pizza to your house in 30 minutes or less needed either an encyclopedic knowledge of the city or the ability to speed read a paper map at a traffic light. But now, thanks to the power of open data, this scene is all but a distant memory. GPS and apps like CityMapper use free public information that's already out there to calculate traffic patterns, feed you the best route, save you time, frustration, and most importantly, open data makes sure your pizza is still warm when you get it. On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we're asking, how open should open data be? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we ask them to weigh in on some tricky questions and help us understand the world we live in. And for this one, we're going to one of the authorities on open data.
I'm Nigel Champbolt. I'm a professor of computer science in the Department of Computer Science at the University of Oxford and also a principal of Jesus College, and I co-founded and chair the Open Data Institute.
Sir Nigel Shadwalt is a man with many titles, but it is the last one that we're going to focus in on, the Open Data Institute. Although 10 or so years ago, the Institute wasn't a thing. It was just an idea surrounding how we share data on the web.
Well, I had been working actually with Tim Berners-Lee on the idea, we called it the semantic web, and the idea here was to try and imagine a world where we knew the world now is made of kind of all sorts of digital support tools, and a fabric, you might even think. So we've been working on research to try and make that real, to kind of surf and connect data in the same seamless way that we do kind of navigate the world of documents and other web pages. And in that work, we'd actually run an experiment with the government, a very small part of government, nobody ever heard of it, the Office of Public Sector Information, OPSI. And they had a dusty little office above Admiralty Arch in the middle of London. And they were really interested in this work.
Nigel says some really forward-thinking civil servants at OBSI realized they had access to all kinds of data sets, but weren't entirely sure how to use them. So around 2006, Nigel and Tim started putting together pilot projects.
We did some great experiments, some great pilots. We were able to do all sorts of cool things, like we would be able to take the food inspection reports that you'd be getting from all these hygiene inspectors, food standards agency people who go around and look at restaurants and fast food bars, and we compare them with the kind of customer reviews you were getting. You'd find these amazing differences between places that had failed their safety inspections and people thought they were quite good food being served. So we kind of produced these interesting league tables, these mashups we called them, of different sorts of data. And we thought this could operate at real scale. Imagine if you could do that for, you know, how well your hospitals were doing and how well your GP surgeries were doing. So we showed them this, excited. You know, they prompted us to do this work, and it was reported to Parliament. And there it may have lain, you know. I suspect, had it not been for the fact that Tim, as a member of this august kind of body, the Order of Merit, had lunch with the then Prime Minister of the day, Gordon Brown, who had asked him, you know, what can we do to make use of the web? And Tim had a very disarmingly simple answer: put your data on it. And so we were both made information advisors, and that was our job. And so we spent a wonderful number of months going around departments saying, give us your data. You know, it's kind of modern version of redistributing all of that public data. This wasn't personal data. This was data about things like where the bus stops are, what the train fares are, all that public stuff that is collected.
And what started out with a few hundred data sets snowballed into thousands. Although Nigel says not every government department was keen to share their information.
We collected this fantastic list of what we call data hugging excuses. You know, it's my data, and the some of the fears were, you know, reasonably, there's a process of taking people on a journey with you. So people say, you know what, the data's just not quite good enough yet. We'd love to make it available. We'll make it available when we've cleaned it up. You know, says, no, make it available now. And lots of eyeballs will see where the errors are and it will get cleaned up faster. Or people would say, you know, this data, it might be dangerous if people get hold of the wrong data, you know, because they might turn up for the trains using the wrong timetable. And you sort of, no. If you build an app and you've got the wrong timetables, the app won't get used. You know, so we kind of took people on a journey of trying to look at all of these various reasons why they thought it was perhaps a difficult or a dangerous or just an inappropriate idea to put the data out there. Oh, if you put it out there, nobody will look at it. You know, data sets have what we call a long tail. That's some data everybody wants to get access to. And some data, you know, roadkill on our road rates is of interest to a much smaller proportion. But there is a bunch of people who will find that interesting. There are lots of data sets under the curve, which people will find useful. So our position was the default should be, if there's no reason not to, make it open.
Obviously, when there is a change in government, there is generally a shift in priorities. But in 2010, when Labour was out and a new government came in, Nigel says they could see the value in keeping the data flowing.
It was a powerful enough idea that it succeeded. The kind of conservative Liberal Democrat alliance, also a coalition, took these ideas forward. And we just moved on from there. And at about a year or so into that government, we went to them and said, you know what? What we could really do with is an institute whose principal function was to find the value in where all of this data is being made available, to drive policy, to kind of set standards, to really look at getting the most value out of what was seen to be a very successful process.
Nigel says then came the Open Data Institute sales pitch. In reality, this venture required a lot of support. They needed funding, and they needed both the public and private sector to buy in.
We kind of went with an offer and said, if we do this, we bring this together, we're going to be able to give policy advice to government. We're going to be able to help train people in data science. We're going to be able to help incubate startup companies who want to take this data and do exciting things with it. We'll be able to explain the idea to big corporates who are thinking, well, why should we make our data open? You know, it's more valuable to us, but we can't work out what to do with it yet, but we'd still like to think of not letting it necessarily be made publicly available. And then the issue about where data that is more sensitive, that is actually relating to a person or has issues to do with privacy, you need to draw very careful boundaries around the kind of data you make available. There were lots of things for this institute to do.
In 2012, Nigel says the Open Data Institute opened its doors. Based in Trendy Shoreditch, where all the techies were trying to get their ideas off the ground, the Institute started its mission.
The UK has regularly been topping the league tables in terms of its work in open data. For example, you go to London, you fire up CityMapper, it's using huge amounts of open data to get you seamlessly from one place to another. You know, all that data that you now take for granted used to be paid for. Transport for London used to pay app developers that it employed to develop its own transport apps. It would charge other people that data. Then it kind of had this road to Damascus experience, just said, you know, let's just make it openly available. Let's make high quality data available in real time. And now there's a whole ecosystem of companies and innovators using this stuff. And we all get around London a lot easier. Frustrating thing is you leave the London boundaries and the apps stop working, you know, because there are still frictions and barriers where particular data sets don't run across the whole country yet, and as yet, and you know, it's an eternal process, an ongoing process of trying to persuade people of the value that in a world of the web of data at scale, the most useful thing you can do with information is have it widely used. And you think back to the GPS signal, which now gets us everywhere from running our runs to riding our bicycles to driving our cars to fleets of lorries and container ships. That was originally a military project, and they de-encrypted the signal and allowed everybody to use it, and it's generated huge, huge value. And the thought that where you exactly are on the planet might be something you need to pay for individually every time you want to know that, nobody would believe that now as plausible.
And in the last 5 years, as our lives have become more intertwined and adapted to open data, Nigel says the Institute has grown. Countries like Malaysia and Mexico are starting up their own institutes, taking on lessons and advice on how to make the data work for the people.
What we're starting to see, and this is where we will need to work out how we sort this environment out for people, is that huge amounts of what people expect and use allows their lives to run smoothly and efficiently. And that data is almost at a level of being a public good or a public utility. And I think we have to wake up to the fact that in the past, we have made serious societal advances when we've said some of what we have to provide is a public task requirement. It's a common good, a public good, and that it's not all there to have a rent or a value sweated from it. So what do we need to put in place to just make the country or environment run better, run more smoothly? And that's not to kind of disestablish all the kind of potential routes to value creation in the exploitation of data, but it's to understand that the base level data, the fundamental open data, that should be the level playing field where people can innovate, build new services, and have some guarantee that the government uses tax, uses revenue to provide a clean, safe, and resilient data infrastructure in the same way it provides clean water, clean air.
And as for the future, well, Nigel says we constantly need to be questioning which data is open and how our data relates to our society.
Really, a way of thinking about this, we refer to what we call the data spectrum, and you can think of it literally like the electromagnetic spectrum. You know, on the one hand, you have a variety of data which are fully open, and they're understood to be open. So, you know, where the bus stops are, or when the trains run, or what the infection rates are in your hospital. So there's a public good in just having that information available. And as you move to data which is more shared, you know, you have to come to some agreements about how you want to make this available, under what terms and conditions, all the way through to what we might think of as properly closed data. So data that might have a national security element, or data that relates to you, an individual, and is highly private and personal to you. We have to understand that the conditions and the licenses and the permissioning varies as you go through that spectrum of data types. And we are not saying make all the data available as open data. That would be a very, very weird environment, and not one I personally would want to see. But what we are doing is trying to push people to say, actually, probably the foundation for a lot of innovation is a good broad base of open data. And then as you build other tiers of types of data, which is more carefully managed, you have to think carefully about that. And I would say, if you like, the big area that's being contested at the moment is who owns our data, our personal data. So I think in the same way we've had an open data revolution, we need a my data or a personal data revolution, where we get some control back of our own data, and it's not just being used to the profit and benefit of either nation states or large corporates.
This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks for the University of Oxford. Our theme was by John Lyons, and additional music for this episode came from Lee Rosevere and Jazza. Special thanks to Sir Nigel Shadbolt, Principal of Jesus College at Oxford. Tell us what you think about this podcast. You can go to Twitter and tweet us at Oxford Sparks. You can find us on Facebook, and we've got a lot of other cool stuff on our website. I know I've said it before, and I will say it again. Go to oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias, and until next time on the podcast, when we ask, how fast is Greenland moving? Bye for now.